Mastering Hassle-Free Payment Collections with Dan Jaffe, episode 158. Are you ready to make your law firm a profit-generating machine that will free up your time and skyrocket your impact? With more than two decades of business growth experience and having proven that you can be successful while prioritizing your family and your impact, introducing the Profit with Law podcast. I am your host, the creator of the Firm Differentiator 10X Effect, Moshe Amsel. Well, hello and welcome to another amazing guest interview here on the Profit with Law podcast. I am pre-recording another intro here because at the time I recorded it, I did not know when the Law Firm Growth Summit tickets would be live, and I'm going to take a moment of your time to share this with you. Now, before I do, I just want to let you know that we just announced the first, and this is the first, there's going to be more, the first of our grand prize giveaway prizes. We are going to be giving you multiple opportunities through this event to be able to win these prizes. Now, when you play the lotto, you're playing against millions of people. Here, you're going to be just playing against thousands of people who are attending this event. So your chances of winning are pretty good, especially since you have the opportunity to get multiple entries through various possibilities. We're giving away a Peloton Bike Plus or a Peloton Tread, along with a one-year subscription to the Peloton app, or some cold hard cash. I think it's $3,500 if you already have a Peloton or have no interest in getting one. So it's really exciting. I am super excited to share that with you. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about the event. Lockdown restrictions has forced many law firm owners to suddenly be operating a virtual law firm. Many of them are finding this mode of operation extremely challenging. We have gathered the top minds in the industry to help you navigate through these challenging and changing times. The Law Firm Growth Summit 2021 is a three-day, 100% virtual conference running from February 9th to the 11th, 2021. Go to lawfirmgrowthsummit.com to snag your tickets. This event is the only virtual event that will feel like you are there in person. We are going to have a real live stage delivered virtually. We're going to have amazing keynotes, amazing sessions, amazing panel discussions. We're going to have live hands-on workshops so you leave without something, with something completed instead of another to-do item. We're going to have live entertainment. We're going to have networking opportunities. You can have face-to-face connections with peers, vendors, and speakers. We are the premier legal industry virtual event. In 2019, we had over 2,300 law firm owners just like you in attendance. It's hosted by me, and we have dozens of well-known industry leaders and experts sharing their best content on what is working now and for the future in law firm growth. Go to lawfirmgrowthsummit.com to get your ticket today. We're gonna have a ton of great topics that are gonna be all centered around preparing your law firm and growing your law firm into the new age of technology, the new age of legal tech, the new age of where legal is going. If you think that we're gonna go back to everything being back in the office, nothing virtual, no more global staff, none of the things that were forced into over the course of the last 9 months, you are sadly mistaken. This is a permanent shift that has just been accelerated by COVID. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring the best speakers to help you navigate this process. This is the best time to participate in our event, and our prices, ticket prices, go up on Monday, so you want to snag them now. Lawfirmgrowthsummit.com. Grab your tickets today. And now I'm going to pass the wand over to my next intro, which is going to be bringing our guest on.
For those of you who are new to the show, you're in for a treat because we've got Dan Jaffe here with us today. And I'm going to tell you about Dan in just a moment. But for those of you who are returning, we really appreciate you. Appreciate you being here. And we appreciate the fact that you're subscribing to the podcast, listening to each episode. We've got a really tight-knit community of attorneys who are loving the show, loving what we're doing. And we appreciate your feedback. We appreciate everything that you tell us. But the best way that you can give us feedback is by doing it publicly. Here's why. If you have somebody looking for law services for you, and they go into a web browser and they say, I mean, let's say you're in Seattle and they say, you know, I'm looking for criminal law attorney in Seattle. Google's going to show them a bunch of law firms. And when they're looking at those law firms, what are they looking to decide which one of these am I going to call? They're looking at your the ratings and reviews of the law firm. That's why reviews are so important. And the, what I'm getting at is not that you should get reviews for your law firm. We have our second to top listened episode of our podcast is our episode where we interview Sam Malai on how he got over 1,000 Google reviews for his law firm. So go and listen to that if you're interested in reviews for law firms, but that's not my point. My point is people look at reviews to determine then whether they should take an action. And our podcast is no different. When they search in the podcast directory for something regarding legal, for something regarding law firms and profitability, anything that's going to produce our podcast in those results, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to look and see what are the ratings and reviews of the show. And that's why we need that number to increase. And that's why I highlight it as many times as I can here on the podcast. So if you haven't done it yet, if you're getting value from the show, I don't want your money. I don't want you to pay me for what I'm doing, but I do want you to just take a few minutes to go. It's so easy. You can do it right on your phone and just click the ratings and reviews and write a review for us and give us a star rating. I don't care how many stars you give us. Just give us a rating. The more ratings that we get, the more people will pay attention and will come and check us out. And you know that we're providing really good content for you. Enough of that. Let's talk about Dan. So Dan Jaffe is the founder of a software company, LawXpand. He's also a lawyer at his law firm, Next Law Professional Corporation in Toronto, Canada. Dan's story is one of necessity. Dan had a cash flow and receivable collection problem at his law firm. He grew his law firm on the back of client payment plans, but getting paid was another story, leading Dan to hit a cash flow and collection problem. Dan looked for solutions specific for law firms, but couldn't find one. So leveraging his experience in technology and venture capital, Dan built his own software. Other law firms in Ontario heard about Dan's solution and asked to license it. Today, Dan spends about 95% of his time at his software company. LawXpand has happy users in US-based law firms and is now expanding its US market launch. I am going to bring Dan on in just a moment, but something in this intro, in this bio, has caught my attention. I just read that off of what they gave me to say. So I never met Dan before today, and I never heard of LawXpand before today. So I am just as intrigued as you are to have this conversation with him. But he said something about client payment plans. And I want to go back to episode 147, where we did unpacking the Clio Trends Report for 2020. And in there, we talked about, Clio talked about how inefficient and ineffective discounting is for a law firm. And we talked about alternatives to that, which included a flat fee model, and it also included payment plans. Do you know that, and I'm gonna actually pull up, I have the Clio report right here. I'm actually gonna pull it up and I'm gonna go back to the data because I don't remember how many or where it was in the hierarchy, but clients, so basically they went to clients and they did a survey and they said, okay, what are the most important factors for you in determining whether to retain a law firm? And the number one thing on the list, the most important decision-making process for them was having good reviews or recommendations. Funny how I already spoke about that today. The second is offering lower prices or discounts. Discount, you know, take that one off. Okay. That's important to them, but it's only important to them because if you think about why it's important to them, because of affordability. The next thing was offers payment plans. And the next is offers fixed fees. If you offer fixed fees and payment plans, you do not need to offer lower prices and discounts because you've essentially made it more affordable. The perfect example is my Peloton sitting right there in my office, right? The Peloton Plus or whatever is $2,400. It was an $1,800 expense when I bought it. Now, if I had a fork over $1,800, I may not have bought the bike. I probably would have, but many people may not buy the bike at $1,800. But instead, when you go to buy the bike, there is a no credit check, simple process where they just put you in a payment plan, 0% interest, 5 years. It's costing me $63 a month to have my Peloton in my office, right? And that's where it's at, is getting people to a point where legal services can be affordable no matter where they are in their financial journey. And I have no idea if I'm on the right page with LawXpand, but hey, we talked about payment plans. I wanted to throw that in. So Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate your time. And I too have my Peloton sitting outside my office here. So right after this interview, I'm jumping on it.
Well, the day that we're recording this, they're releasing earnings today. So I'm actually trying to decide whether I want to do an earnings trade for Peloton. So I got till 4 o'clock to think about that. But if you've been in Peloton stock, then you are riding high, just like the people who are sitting on their bike pedaling. But this is not a Peloton commercial. Dan, I would love to know, how'd you get into the software market? I mean, it says it was needs-based. I get that. But not everybody who has a problem goes and creates a technological solution to fix their problem. So give me the backstory of who you are and how you got here.
No, thank you. And I appreciate your time. Yeah, it is unusual. Usually when you have a problem, you just go out and buy one as opposed to build it. But it just really comes from my DNA. So, you know, I'm dating myself, but I graduated, you know, with a joint MBA law degree in the 90s. And I actually spent most of my time in business, not in law. I was in a technology company right when I got out of law school. Then I worked in venture capital. And that really opened my desire and for technology. And, you know, I'm a technology geek in a lot of ways. I opened my law firm actually a number of years ago, really to execute a business opportunity. There was a void in the legal services market that led me to start my law firm, Next Law. Now, my whole idea, interestingly enough, it's analogous to the finance that Peloton does and the finance that Apple does with their phones. I knew that in my market in Ontario, where there's 15 million people that live here, if you can package your services up with payment plans, you can, the sensitivity regarding fees just goes way down. So my law firm charges gladly more than almost all other law firms in my market, and we get paid because we break it into affordable monthly payments. That's how I grew my law firm. But there's another side of it, which is the collection side and the cash flow side. So the first part of it was easy, packaging the services up, you know, flat fee, but we also have hourly fee as well, but we do it with payment plans. But getting paid is another story. And that's where I hit my wall in terms of cash collection. And once you hit a cash collection wall, it's obviously financially it's difficult, but it causes an amazing amount of stress and things like that. So what I did was I was looking for a solution for my cash collection problem that was specific for law firms. There wasn't one. So just on my DNA and my background, I ended up building one. And it was really just to satisfy my own law firm. And then word spread, and that's how we got going.
Yeah, so I'm gonna show, this is the Clio Trends Report right here, right? And I don't know if you saw this, but this is page 66. 72% of consumers would prefer to pay their legal fees via payment plan. 53% of law firms are equipped to offer payment plans. Why would you venture that 53% of law firms are equipped to accept payment plans? What about the other 47%? What's the criteria that somebody can, you know, be able to collect payment plans?
It's a great question. I think there's a general fear of payment plans because I think people get burned, right? You know, you're loaning money. It's a lot of times it's to people, you know, folks who are in a middle income or lower income class. And when you get burned, it hurts, right? And that hurt magnifies, and people talk about the hurt on social media, and they get burned. They just say, "I'm not going to do it," and a lot of lawyers are more conservative in nature, and they just back off. And I get it because I've been in the position in my law firm, right, where I wasn't getting paid for a lot of things, and it hurts, right? Because it's not like you can easily leave a case if you're on a family matter or on a criminal matter, just leaving a case, you know, for non-payment. It's possible, but it's difficult if you don't do it the right way. So, you know, once burned, you just kind of back off. But you know, for that 40+% they're backing off, you're missing a huge opportunity, especially now because of COVID, right? Just all that data in the excellent CLIA report, that data is, I'm sure it's now magnified because of COVID, right? You know, people need help with their cash flow, they need help with payment plans. And those lawyers that can do it actually are going to really, really benefit. And there's a huge opportunity for growth. So for that 40+%, I think it's the point of, you know, feeling that they've been burned or hearing about that they've been burned, but that doesn't mean you can't do it.
Yeah. I'm pulling the report out again, because there's something that they highlight in here, which is it's wild to think about it this way. And if I could just find it quickly enough here. Prior to the pandemic, according to research conducted by the Federal Reserve on the economic well-being in U.S. households, in 2018, 39% of Americans didn't have funds available to pay for a $400 emergency expense. In 2013, 5 years prior to that, this number was even higher at 50%. Given that the average rate for a lawyer in the U.S. is $290 per hour, the research from the Federal Reserve indicates that the average American couldn't afford to deal with a legal issue that would require more than 1.4 hours of a lawyer's time. And, you know, and that's where, you know, that's what we're talking about, right? That's, you know, that's the world that we live in, the, you know, which we're in this economy of, not even talking about the unfairness of, you know, some people getting really wealthy and some people really struggling to make a living. But even more than that, it's where we've been trained on monthly payments, right? Everything that we do is, and the push to subscription just continues to accelerate. We've got, you know, Netflix and Hulu and, you know, just look at all the entertainment subscriptions that we have. Then we've got our monthly payment for our cell phone, and now we've got the Peloton. But even if we're talking about somebody who can't afford a Peloton or can't afford the streaming video subscriptions, you know, they've been, you know, car payments. And that's a whole nother conversation. They shouldn't be buying a car and getting into car payments, but it's a very poor financial decision. But the reality is that most Americans are carrying a car payment. They're carrying student loan payments. And these are all payments that they have. And suddenly their entire life revolves around those monthly payments. And if they now need to buy something that doesn't fit into that payment model, it's like, it's whoa, how do I navigate this? This is a road I haven't traveled. And that's really where, you know, it becomes very scary for them to enter into that transaction, whether it's because it's a flat fee that they need to come up with up front or a retainer, or it's this open-ended situation of black hole where I'm going to be getting billed hours and I have no control over it whatsoever.
Yeah, those are big fears. We do, and I see it differently in terms of how, for example, a lot of our clients are, you know, criminal law firms and family law firms, right? And a lot of the criminal law firms we deal with are really good at packaging up flat and fixed fees, but they still need to give payment plans, right? So even if you're dealing with something that's a lesser offense, you know, it still costs money and you could package it up for maybe $2,500. Or we're dealing with family law firms that are billing hourly. It's you got to package it in the right way. Like the beauty with Peloton, I remember entering that transaction, it just seemed so affordable. It was like a 0%. Right. I forget.
And the so number. Easy. It was selecting a radio button, right? It was buy it in full or pay payments.
And it was also pay a payment at 0%. So why would anyone pay it full, right? So it made it a no brainer. So using that analogy with the law firms, you know, I find that, you know, as law firms, you never really want to take less than $500 a month payment, like just generally. But I think once you creep above 1,000, it's a threshold for people. So most of the law firms that we're dealing with, when they package up payment plans, what I'm seeing, they're trying to cater that payment plan to the cash flow that client, you know, has, right? And that's critical, right? You can say, I want $3,000 a month or $1,500 a month. Well, it ain't there. You ain't getting blood from a stone. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, generally there's a sweet spot. People can pay upwards to $1,000 and you just, you work with a client, you cater your plan to their cash flow. That's absolutely critical. And one of the key things to properly setting up payment plans is understanding, you know, what is your client's cash flow, what will work with them, and make sure that that obviously works with your expense structure and the cash flow that you need as a law firm. So it's super important to get that flow right, to make sure that, yes, they're making a payment for you, but it's not so oppressive, that payment, that that person is going to be under even more stress than they already are when they came to your law firm.
Yeah, no, the biggest issue that we that I can imagine you probably come across with payment plans is the issue of risk, right? So when I offer a payment plan, I am accepting risk that if the client doesn't pay, I've done the work and now I'm not getting paid for the work, right? Is there any way of mitigating that risk or offloading it off of the law firm?
Well, it's a great question. And you know, let's, you know, elevating this on one level with payment plans, there's two things to payment plans, right? There's three things, actually. There's the setup of a payment plan, then there's the collection of the payments, and you want to measure, right? Technology, let's talk about collection. So what we do is, so we automate the collection, that collection and communication workflow, that's critical. But that's one part of it. The other part of it's setup. So if you have a poor system, and that includes assess and risk, I don't care how great your collection stage is, you're not going to do well. So the setup stage, and part of that setup stage is assessing the risk. So what we tell the law firms that we work with is, let's look at your system for intake. So just like you have an intake system with new clients, you need an intake system for payment plans. And part of the key thing is assessing risk, right? In theory, so if you go to a car and get a car payment, they're going to do a formal credit check on you. For a law firm, when you're charging $2,500 or $5,000 or a case that may be $7,500 over time, you're probably not doing a credit check. But you can, but they're proxies for credit checks, okay? It's asking questions like, how are you going to pay me? Where's the cash flow coming from? You know, are you comfortable with $750 a month? Does your cash flow support that? You know, if not, where does it come from? You want to assess your risk. Are you going to get paid? And not only are you going to get paid, but how difficult or not is it to get paid? So there's a visceral, a gut level. And the other side of it, there's also some red flags, right? So, you know, I always tell law firm, like what I did, the mistake that I made when I launched my law firm, right? I literally gave everyone a payment plan, like everyone. And now automating the collection really improved dramatically my performance. But there were some people I should never have financed, never. And those ones really take up a lot of unnecessary time and effort and stress. I could have avoided that if I asked some simple questions. And also, most of them had in common these three things, okay? And this is where, if you're going to finance someone, maybe you should just say no. Okay, the first thing, and it all has to do with the first payment. Okay, so you negotiate your fee, whether it's a flat fee or whether it's an hourly fee, and you say, look, I want $1,500 in that first payment. So if you see any of these three things, you may want to revisit whether you want to finance this client.
Okay.
The first thing is, if you short pay, just say you agree to a $1,500 down payment, and they short pay you, they pay you $500. It's a red flag. The second one is the change the date of the first payment. So they're supposed to pay you on the 14th of the month. Say, you know, can I pay you next month or can I pay you at the end of the month? Red flag. And the biggest red flag for sure, by far, is they start renegotiating fees before that. You've discussed the fee, you've discussed the first payment, and then they start renegotiating the fees before they make the first payment. And those three scenarios, they're red flags, and not little ones, are big ones that you really should reconsider whether you should be financing that client. Let me ask you this.
So if one of those three things happens, is that an automatic trigger in your mind to say, you know what, we agreed to this, but based on the questions you're asking, we see that you're not ready for a payment plan. We're going to have to back out of representing you. Or do you take a different approach and say, hey, this question that you're asking is a red flag to me. The answer is going to be no. Are you able to make this payment or not? Is this going to be an issue? And allow them to pay it. And if they pay it, then you say, okay, red flag avoided. Or is the fact that they ask the question enough to say, I need to get out of this?
Yeah, it's really a function. It's actually a phenomenal question. I think it's, there are no hard rules. You know, you have policies and guidelines and you may make exceptions. I tend to use the latter. And what I do is, meaning I will say, hey, look, this is like a massive red flag for me, you know, and can you see why? And what I do is in those situations, we actually write notes in our software. And then if they breach that first payment, that's when we actually terminate. So we've given them the first chance, massive red flag. And then for the next payment, if they have a problem with that next payment, that's when we absolutely would terminate. But I see it all over the place. I think the more important thing is actually the fact that you actually have a policy in place in your law firm, that you've actually thought about that, and then you decide to take a route. So if you do not term, if you go ahead with that client, make notes internally. And if they are late on the first payment after the initial deposit, then wow, then you really should walk. Because all that's going to happen is you're going to be chasing clients, and then you're going to become part of that 40%+ that Cleo references that just never, you know, that don't use payment plans because they've been burned. And this is one of the reasons, and it's avoidable.
Now, it sounds like if I'm armed with the right information on how to navigate payment plans, then that's all I need, right? So you created a software product out of this. So walk me through, what does somebody need in order to have this in place that requires a software solution to accept payment plans?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So the idea is where a lot of firms, you know, take a lot of time, that is the workflow and the communication behind the collection, right? And this is a stage where, you know, we just spoke about setup, you know, assessing risk and things like that. Once you've done that, you then got to move into a collection stage. And this is where law firms execute badly. And that's the source of this discussion. But let me also just talk realities if you're not at 90, you know, if you're not at a high threshold of payment. You need to set up proper expectations for your law firm as to what's practical. The goal is, and if you look at Cleo, they talk about getting, you know, growing law firms have a 90%+ collection rate, okay? And you want to be there as a growing law firm, but that takes time and it's an iterative process, right? So you need to get a lot of little things right consistently. So for example, in terms of automation, if there's confusion with the payment, that's going to generate a phone call, a text, or an email for an explanation. That's worth money, right? And worse, if they call you at $300 an hour, that 3-4 minutes is an expensive, unnecessary call. That call or that email or that text, is like a cut, okay? One cut's not going to kill you, but if you get hundreds of cuts, it's going to have huge impact on your cash flow. So
I'm gonna interject real quick because you just reminded me of something. So in the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, I don't know if you've read it.
No.
In the introduction to the book, he talks about the England cycling team and how they, you know, they hadn't won in 50 some odd years. They were, you know, they just were known to be like the, you know, one of the worst teams out there in, you know, in the competitive landscape. And they got a new coach to come in and fix the problem. And he came in and he said, what we are going to do is we are going to start to make changes that are going to make 1% difference. And he literally, started to do really, really minor things like, you know, inflating tires, replacing tires early, changing the seat, you know, the angle of the seat they're sitting on, you know, really small things that you wouldn't think make a difference, but there are these micro adjustments that, that are just that, they're just a micro adjustment. And then when they finally came to compete, they took first place because all those micro adjustments added up to make the big adjustment they needed. And, this is when you started saying micro cuts. You know, these onesie twosie cuts, it's the opposite direction, but it's the same concept, right? When you start to take these little hits, these little 3-4 minute hits, these little 1% hits, standing alone, they appear to be meaningless. But when you put them together, they're going to put you in last place, you know, and that's what I see from what you're sharing.
That's exactly, we see it all the time, right? So when we have law firms come to us because, you know, they may know they have a bad collection rate. So collection rate is, you know, what you collect relative to what you build, obviously, right? And the firms that are below 80%, below 70%, which is not a great place to be, they come to us, say, look, we have a poor collection rate, let's talk to us. Or the other firms that come to us, they don't know their collection rate. In fact, most of the firms don't know their collection rate. But they have a visceral feeling. They know they're chasing clients for money. And it's and what they're feeling are all those micro cuts, right? Like they're feeling they're getting too many phone calls. They're feeling they're getting, you know, clients calling you and arguing like, why do I owe this money to you again? I thought we negotiated this. I thought we negotiated that. Or they're consistent, or clients are late paying or they're part paying. Those are feelings of chasing, and those are little cuts, and those bubble to the surface, and they manifest themselves in a couple ways. They manifest themselves in poor cash flow, which, you know, and they manifest themselves in stress, like running. And I've been there. Like I've been in a situation where I haven't been paid by a client and I go to the court and it's too late to get off the record. Too bad, I'm working for free, or I'm chasing a client for money. And it's just actually in these COVID times. So I've been there, right? So that those micro cuts matter. And if you don't, you may not feel the first few of them, but believe me, over time, you're going to know. And we see it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, the client saying, hey, I thought we had a different arrangement, or, usually what's happening is that you're making your own bed, right? One of the things in the Clio Trends report, when they talk about not discounting your services, the first reason that they say is because clients are going to get used to and come to expect that discount. And the same thing comes to collections, right? If you don't go after that first bill, if you're not making sure that they're paying it on time and you're not aggressive about it, they're not going to pay any bill on time. If you don't make sure that they replenish their retainer when they're supposed to, they're never going to replenish their retainer when they're supposed to. You know, I'm a landlord, right? I have real estate rental property. And when I have a tenant in the first month or the second month pays late, I send them a very aggressive, nasty message. And it's not because I am a nasty person. I'm like the nicest person that you will ever meet. But it's setting the tone for the rest of the relationship. And it's amazing how easily that works, because they're so taken aback because they've had such wonderful experience with me, and they see that message and it scares them. And they're like, where's this coming from? Listen, we can have a great relationship. You can be great tenants. I could be a great landlord, but it's all going to be based on knowing that you're going to stick to your end of the bargain. And that is that you pay your fee when you're supposed to pay it.
I got to tell you, Moshe, it's probably the most important point, which is, one, you got to manage expectations. And here's the thing, reminders, you know, going back to a question you asked, like, what's your law firm, like, what is your software company doing that, you know, to collect? You're talking about reminders. You're talking about how you're communicating with the client. That communication is everything, if you think about it, right? So you know, those reminders to get paid, obviously, if you don't remind, people are busy. You got to remind people to pay and assume that your client's not paying you is not their number one priority. Okay, let's just put that out there. So you got to remind clients to pay you. And those reminders are the foundation of a proactive communication plan. But remember, if you do it wrong and remind people the wrong way and you get them angry, not only will you not get paid, or it'll take you longer to get paid, you're actually risking your reputation with a client. You know, you mentioned something really important, which is, you know, post a review, you know, a review of what I'm doing, post a review about my podcast, post a review of my services. If you do a poor job in reminders with your clients about payments, I don't care if you've done a home run, if you've allowed them to keep their kids, or you allowed them to keep their house, or you kept them out of jail. Doesn't matter. All they're going to remember is that they believe that you screwed them over for money. Okay. So you're going to not only negate and potentially for bad reviews, you're actually potentially going to get a complaint with your state bar. So your communication that you have with your clients for, you know, we're all taught as lawyers to communicate with cases, keep your clients up to date about what's happening. You got to put the same vigor and effort into doing the right communication plan for your clients regarding payments. If you do that right, not only are you going to get paid on time and with hassle, you're going to keep clients happy. And it just mentioned exactly what you said. It's going to enhance your reputation as a law firm because it's shown that not only are you on top of the legal matters, you're on top of the business. Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we do is we've crafted, you know, so the way we do our reminders, they're not simple text reminders. There's so much more that goes into it, but a huge amount of effort has gone into designing this. And probably the biggest feedback that we get from the law firms that are using our software is how seamless the communication is and how they're getting paid without that hassle. It's actually quite amazing. And I do want to mention, and maybe we'll talk about in a minute, how invoices kill the communication process, but we can get to that.
I would love to know more about the inner workings, how it works and how it integrates with other payment systems that you already have in place. Does it replace it? Does it augment it? But before we go into the software itself to understand how that works, one of the things that you mentioned is how much your reputation can get hurt by doing the wrong thing on the financial side of the relationship. And this brought to mind something that I went through recently. So I have a dog. His name is Rascal. For those of you who have listened to country music, his name is Rascal Flatts. So, but anyway, he's been going through this thing where he's got hypercalcemia. His calcium is elevated, which causes all kinds of problems. It causes unsteadiness when he's walking and climbing stairs, causes excessive thirst, decreased appetite, a lot of negative side effects that we don't like. And it can also cause stones in his bladder. So we need to resolve it. And it turns out it's being caused by an overactive parathyroid hormone. I don't want to go into too much detail of the actual thing, but when we found out what the diagnosis was and we decided that we're going to go and find the top doctor to deal with this, we found a vet hospital that was the elite of the elite. Like it's, you know, the best vets work there. Right. And I went to check out the reviews of this facility. And I would say about 90% of the reviews were negative reviews because the perception of the people using them was that they're more interested in collecting money from you than treating your pet, because they told me it was going to be this. And then they turned around and sold me this service that cost me 7 times more. And, you know, and that is purely poor communication, setting a lower expectation up front and then turning around and having a, you know, something different later caused, and it caused me to not use them. Even though I am filtering, I know, okay, so this is, you know, it's really a bad process that they have, you know, but then I started to question, you know, like, well, how do I know if they really have my pet's best interest at heart or if they're really going after my money? I'd rather just stay away from them and not have to question, you know, whether we're doing the right thing for my pet. And it's, you know, it brings home exactly what you're saying, because they probably fixed the problem for every single one of those reviewers. They probably saved their dog or their cat or they, you know, or did the right thing for them, yet they got a negative review out of it. And it all comes back to poor communication and poor presentation of what they're going to go through and what they should come to expect. Had they told them when they first walked through the door, there are going to be a ton of possibilities of what's going on with your pet. And it can range anywhere from, you know, $300 to do the diagnostics and tell you that everything's fine to $50,000 if this is the problem, and, you know, and really set the stage for what they're about to go through and find out and lay it out to them and set that expectation and then talk about what would you want to do if it's this expensive? Like, is that something that you're prepared to handle and talk about and, you know, and have those conversations up front? Probably they'd have a very different review board, you know, for their facility. So I think that this, you know, reviews are so important. And, you know, we I keep going back to this, you know, the Clio Trends report that I'm standing here holding in my hand, right? And they do such a good job of telling us where the industry is at and what's going on. And the number one factor that consumers are using to decide whether to hire an attorney is reviews or referrals, right? Reviews or referrals. And that's the number one factor. If you don't get this right,
you're dead.
If you fail in getting good reviews, you're dead.
Yeah, you're dead.
Right? You're just not going to succeed. You're not going to grow. Sure, you can have some business. You'll survive. You'll probably survive. You'll probably be okay. But if you want to grow, if you want to lead in your space, whether it's your practice area, your location, whatever your specific arena is, if you want to be the leader, you're going to have to figure out how to harness good reviews. And the financial transaction, it seems like an afterthought, but it is the main focal point for your client. Sure, they want a good outcome. They want a good attorney, and they're going to be selective about that. But at the end of the day, they want to have a good experience in paying for that as well. And that's where, you know, I think that this is a great conversation that we're having, because it's highlighting something we don't talk about a lot. You know, it's kind of like when we're growing up, our parents don't talk to us about money, yeah. You know, and we shy away from that conversation. Yeah. And I think that this podcast is called Profit with Law. You don't profit without collecting money. Right. And that's the thing is looking at payment plans and looking at how you communicate those payment plans. I absolutely see the benefit of understanding that it's not just offering the payment plans, but it's also how you communicate it and how you collect it. I want to switch gears. That was a very long-winded feedback for what you shared. And I want to ask a question that I had a while back that I've just been holding in my head before I lose it. When somebody signs up for a payment plan, they're essentially the law firm is taking risks, because there's a good chance that you're going to do the service or complete the service before the payment plan is completed, right? And we talked about, you know, we talked about mitigating that risk, but my question is, you know, like if a personal injury firm wants to start doing contingency work, if they start doing contingency work only and they do nothing else, they need to have a war chest of cash to carry them through, because it can be 9 to 12 months before they start seeing their first payout, right? This is kind of entering the same realm where you really need to know your numbers to know what capacity do you have to carry X number of clients on payment plans. Do you solve that problem with your software? Like, do you help them be able to say, okay, we have X number of dollars in the bank, our expenses are X, and if we enter into payment plans and we have a capacity to handle X number of cases, we can only take 30% of them as payment plans in order to not kill ourselves in the process?
I think you've just went behind the scenes and read our product roadmap. So, we don't do that today. We're getting there. I'll tell you what we're not. Like, we're not a payment processor. So most of our, not all of them, but most of the law firms that use our stuff actually use they use LawPay.
Right.
Okay.
And I love LawPay.
Love
free awesome. Plug. Tom, I plugged you.
Yeah. You know what? So they use LawPay. So, you know, let me leave that there. And a lot of the law firms that are using use Clio for project. So we're this communication and tracking platform that's kind of like the pro version, right? I wish in life we just have one set of software that would handle everything. It doesn't work that way. You know, for the law firms that use our software for collecting and for cash flow, you know, the existing solutions using the LawPays and the Clios that are awesome, they needed a more of a pro solution. So for most law firms, yeah, they're okay using what's out there. It's for those people that need more of a dedicated solution regarding cash collection. That's when they come to us. Leading into your question and answering your question, which is the capacity to take clients on, I want to relate it to a statement that you made about the date of ending a case. It's always, for the family law firms that we deal with and a lot of the criminal law firms that we deal with, you just want to get paid, obviously, before the end of the case. If you don't, you're going to lose your leverage, right? Obviously to get paid. But the thing is, you may not know the end date of a case before you start. Okay. It's very, very common. But over time, you actually start to get visibility to that end date. You just, you do, whether it's a in family law and criminal. When you get that visibility to an end date, you got to capture that date and you got to track how much is owed to you relative to that date. So you don't find yourself in a position where case is over, you delivered the legal services, and now you have an outstanding receivable. So you want to track your payment plans relative to the case ending date, because you may need to revise the timing of your plan to match that anticipated end date, or you may need to take other actions. So, you know,
Dan, I got to jump in here because one of the reasons I hate hourly billing, I mean, I despise hourly billing. And one of the main reasons that I do is because it puts you at odds with the client, yeah, right? You always want to bill more time. They want to pay for less time, which puts you in a contentious relationship every single time, which is why invoices are such a painful thing, right? And we didn't even talk about invoices. I get you don't like invoices, but which is why invoicing your client is such a painful experience, because you're sending them, before you even send it, and people shouldn't be doing this. I just had this conversation in the interview I did this morning. Maybe it's the one that was released the week before this, but we just had this conversation. You shouldn't be discounting your services, right? Shouldn't be going and cutting the hours that you're charging before you even invoice. But lawyers are doing that. You're going and saying, oh, this shouldn't have taken 4 hours. It should have taken 2 hours. I'm going to cut it by 2 hours. So you, even before you go to the client to ask for the money, you're cutting it. Then the client gets it and they're like, I shouldn't have had to pay $20,000 for what you did for me this month. Let me, you know, let's revisit this. And then by the time you're done the conversation, you've knocked it down to 15, right? And, you know, that's what's happening in that relationship. And it sounds to me like by doing payment plans and by knowing that I need to get paid before this is over, that it is now in my best interest to extend or punt their case until I get paid. And that sounds to me like we're once again in a contentious relationship with the client. They want everything completed and you want to get paid. So therefore, you need to either accelerate the payments or push that end date out to make sure that you have that leverage to get paid. Am I misunderstanding this, or is that really what's going on?
No. You bring up, there's a lot of points you're bringing up and they're all super valid, right? There's a movement, I think, just generally for clients to pay flat fees. I see it, you know, with the criminal law firms, especially for the lesser serious cases, to package them up in flat fees makes a lot of sense. Family lawyers, I'm starting to see that in packaging their services as flat fees. And the ones that are doing it that are working with us, they're crushing it.
It's very hard to do it when it goes to litigation, right?
It is
hard. When it's uncontested and it's simply a matter of creating having the conversations about what do you want to do with your kids? What do you want to do with your money? What do you want to do with this asset, that asset? Go back and forth a couple of times, write up a document, have the party sign it, be done. You can easily package that into a flat fee. It's when you're at the whim of the court and you have no idea how much time it's going to take back and forth and how many times you're going to end up in court. And the other party could just, keep not showing up or keep punting and not doing their thing. And it's completely out of your control. You know, I can see where that would be very difficult to package in a flat fee environment, but there's definitely most of what we do can be flat fee.
What's interesting, one of the big takeaways, we're constantly getting feedback from the law firms that we're working with. And one of the things we're seeing consistently, and I explain this to the law firms that come to us, but they totally get it once they start using our system, is obviously you need to send reminders that are clear, right? And a lot of lawyers believe that when you send an invoice, that leads to clarity and that leads to payment, right? Clarity is key. The reality is invoices, I believe clients mentally check out when they get an invoice because they're looking at minutes, or even if it's flat fee, they're looking at their money burn away. They're actually looking at that invoice from 100% point of pain. What we do is we actually separate. So we have a communication system in our software. We don't include invoicing in our software at all. We actually separate invoices from payments. And we say, if you want to see your invoice, let us know. Click here, you can get it. But separating the invoices from the payments owed to you is hugely, it's incredibly effective. And we see that all the time because you're separating that pain point. And invoices are a pain point for clients. And again, anytime you have some type of pain point, anytime you have some type of confusion, that is a paper cut that's going to lead to a drag on your cash flow.
Yeah, we can go on all day on this topic, and there's two different things, right? So there's how do I package my services? How do I present it to the client in a meaningful way that I can make money, they can be happy, they have a predictable, outcome that they can rely on. And I think it's really important, and I think that the industry is going there. It's going to be, at some point you're not going to be able to lead with hourly billing. You're going to have some sort of flat fee for the first component of working with somebody, no matter what you're doing, except for contingency work, right? Except for like PI, where they don't pay anything. And, it all comes out of the proceeds. But I just realized time has run on us, right? We've been on for, we haven't been interviewing for over an hour, but we've been on for over an hour. I need to be mindful of your time and my time. This conversation is not over. We need to have another one. We need to continue this. But if we were to put a pin in it right now and, just end it here, what is the one piece of advice that you can give somebody who's considering implementing payment plans in their practice to do this right? What is the perfect first step to take to start to do this? And then how do they find out more about what you're doing? And if they have questions where they can follow up with you.
Yeah, the first thing is don't be scared of payment plans. Just put in place a system for tracking and communication. Absolutely critical. That's on the execution side, and then set up appropriately, assess that risk. And we spoke about the risk early in the conversation. So assess the risk by asking some quick questions, looking for some red flags, and make sure you have the proper tracking. So you're tracking, payments, and then your communication is everything. It's everything. Put in place a proactive communication system and you will get paid, and you'll get paid without chasing clients. In terms of, finding out more about us, we're at lawxpand.com. My email is dan@lawxpand.com. You can schedule a demo. And also, if you reference this show, Moshe, we will have a special exclusive for Moshe that's not on our website. So give a demo, and then we can put people to a free trial and check out what we got.
Awesome, Dan, I love it. We're gonna link all this up in the show notes. And I really appreciate your time, and this has been a great conversation. I loved having it. I think this is really important. I think that we need to start to look under the hood and see if we can find ways for law offices to mitigate the risk when doing payment plans. And I think that's the one big thing that we haven't really addressed. We're addressing how to communicate it, we're addressing how to structure it. But we got to find a solution to mitigate the risk so that it's not the law firm that's taking all the risk. And maybe we're shifting some of that to the client or some intermediary party somehow. But I love the rest of the conversation. I really think that, flat fees and payment plans are the way that we're going to be doing business. And I love that you have a tool that's just making it more seamless and easier. I can't wait to see it. I think you're going to give me a demo on the back end. So I'm looking forward to that. And folks, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. That's the best way we can grow the audience of the podcast, is if each one of our listeners shared this with a friend, and then maybe 50% of those people stuck around and subscribed, we'd have a 50% growth rate every time we release an episode. So, just take this episode, share it with a friend, somebody who you think can benefit from it. And we'd appreciate it greatly. And your friend would appreciate it too. So folks, that's it. We're going to see you. We're here twice a week, every Tuesday, every Thursday. Can't wait to see you next Tuesday on our solo episode. And we're going to keep bringing you amazing guests, just like Dan, here on the show. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you been enjoying the show? We sure hope so. To make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to hit the subscribe button in your podcast player app. Next week, we will be back with more valuable resources and ideas on how to break the mold and take your law firm to the next level.